Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Welcome to New Orleans.
We all know what happened in New Orleans on August 29th, 2005.
The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, their defense was, this was a humongous storm.
It was a cover-up.
People didn't have to die.
Harry Shearer is a man of many talents. Perhaps he's best known as a mockumentarian. He's Derek Smalls, the hirsute bassist of Spinal Tap. He's one of the folksmen in A Mighty Wind. But this erudite guy, who also hosts a scathingly tart public radio show called Les Show, he must have noticed that mockumentarian is a word reverse-engineered from the word documentarian. So he made a documentary. You heard it there, the trailer about Hurricane Katrina and New Orleans. It contains, I think, zero shots of people on roofs, zero shots of people inside the Superdome, zero shots of people crying outside the convention center, lots of shots of soil scientists examining dirt. Harry Shearer joins me now. Hi, Harry.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
The Big Uneasy is the name of your documentary, and why? It seems like a very tough lift of all the human stories to tell that immediately grip the sense of pathos. Why'd you go the civil engineering route?
Because that's the answer to the one question that the media have refused to ask for 5 years. Why did this happen? We've had enough pathos. We just lived through another barrage or welter or orgy of the shots of that you described. And people who lived through that and saw that still don't know why the thing happened. I talked to a distinguished anchor person for one of the major broadcasters some months after the flood, and said at the time, why is it the people who watch your broadcast don't know why New Orleans flooded? And the answer was, we just think the emotional stories are more compelling for our audience. That's a quote. And at some point, as the fifth anniversary approached, it seemed to me like an appropriate point. The reason why, which was on the public record, the results of two independent engineering investigations by two distinguished teams, one out of UC Berkeley and one out of LSU, as well as the report of a whistleblower inside the Army Corps of Engineers casting grave doubt about the new improved system, seemed to me that had to be put on the public record in a big and hopefully impressive way.
So take me through the journey of how you found out about it, and was it just covering these few articles? I know you don't think it was covered extensively. You educating yourself, and then talk about the step of, now what I have to do about this, now that I know, is I have to make a documentary about it.
Well, I live much of the year in New Orleans, and New Orleans media got two Pulitzer Prizes, the New Orleans newspaper, for covering this story on a day-to-day basis. And so if you lived there and read the local media, you were seeing the interim reports, the interim findings from these investigations as they were going along, the blowback from the Army Corps of Engineers calling these guys liars and saying they didn't know diddly squat about engineering. Then the backpedaling by the Army Corps in many cases, and then the final reports of these two teams. It was all known to New Orleanians, and then you had this incredible discontinuity for 3 or 4 years where people in New Orleans would refer to the event as the failure of the federal levees or the federal floods, and people from outside kept saying, you know, Hurricane Katrina whacked New Orleans. And that discontinuity, I think, has resulted in punishing New Orleans in several ways, which we can go into. So my breaking point came when I was watching President Obama last October in his first appearance in New Orleans since he was elected, and he had a town hall meeting, and he called it a natural disaster. And my head exploded, because I know he's smarter than that. And so I realized the city of New Orleans was losing control of the narrative of its own near destruction. And so I decided to, what could possibly try to right that balance was a really proper feature-length documentary with really high production values, great photography, great music, really good animation to illustrate what was going on. And as it happened, these three people, the two leaders of the investigations and the whistleblower, turned out to be great human stories as well, because what happened to them when they stood up and told the truth, it was not a pretty story.
And we'll get to those three in a second, and I'll say that I'm Mike Pesca, sitting in for Brian Lehrer, WNYC, talking about Harry Shearer, whose new documentary is The Big Uneasy, about the failure of civil engineering, the Army Corps of Engineers, all the man-made things that went wrong as a result of Hurricane Katrina. When President Obama or anyone says natural disaster, obviously they're thinking of a hurricane, I get the sense that it drives halfway informed New Orleanians crazy. Why do you think that Obama says that? Is it lazy on his part? Does he really not know? Or is it just the sort of phrase that's on the top of your mind, but if he thought about it, he'd say something different?
Well, you know, I don't have my license as a mind reader yet. I'm still studying. My guess would be if you acknowledge that the millions of people who were uprooted, the hundreds of thousands of homes that were destroyed, the 100,000 people that are still involuntary evacuees, if you acknowledge that the federal government bears, according to these two reports, primary and sole responsibility for all of this. We open the movie with a quote from Dr. Ray Seed at UC Berkeley saying, with the right kind of hurricane protection, the result of Katrina in New Orleans would have been, quote, wet ankles. That's all Katrina would have done to New Orleans. So the federal failure, if you acknowledge that and you're the president of the United States, the next question obviously is, okay, what are you going to do about it? What are you going to do really to fix it, not just patch up and give the same people who did it wrong the last time a lot more money to do it again? I don't think he wanted that burden, me personally, but that's just my guess.
And the documentary does chronicle what they're doing about it, and that's kind of a scary answer, isn't it?
It's what I've been most amazed by. I made the picture for the rest of the country, not for New Orleans, but the reaction in New Orleans has been, uh-oh, somebody put all these pieces together, uh-oh. It's not a reassuring picture that it paints of the Army Corps of Engineers. And I hasten to say, New Orleans is the canary in the coal mine because the Army Corps of Engineers is supposedly protecting more than 100 American communities with their levees. And they've admitted that more than 100 of them are possibly defective, most notably Sacramento, California, where Arnold Schwarzenegger lives, and which is the capstone of the entire California water system. So it's not just a New Orleans story. It's an American story. We're doing our water policy, it turns out, one pork barrel project at a time. That's the way the Corps of Engineers works. And we go into a little bit in the film with an expert on the Corps, that's the Corps is that way, not because they're necessarily bad people, because that's the way Congress likes it.
Which is that they're good at their core job, no pun intended, which is building during military campaigns. But the civil engineering aspects, not as good, but that's okay, as you document. No one really questions it because everyone gets their own project in their district. And it's sort of a bipartisan, unremarked upon incompetence.
That's right. It's both parties. I mean, the failures in this system that failed in 2005 happened over 4.5 decades under administrations of both parties. That's one reason I think this story hasn't gotten more traction, is because neither party can use it as a bludgeon against the other.
That's probably true. And in fact, politically, and I've read a lot of your political writings over the years, and I listen to the show, it doesn't surprise me that, I have no doubt who you voted for last election, even if you didn't disclose it. But the only kind of political hero in the whole movie is Republican Senator David Vitter,
who
got a guy on the hot seat during congressional testimony. Why don't you talk about that testimony a little bit? It was kind of amazing.
Yeah, I put that in the film, first of all, because the guy he's got on the hot seat is the commandant, I guess, of the Army Corps of Engineers, the big cheese of the Army Corps, testifying last summer. And it's a great colloquy between Vitter and Major General Walsh is the man's name. And I put it in for two reasons. One, because I was adamant at including as much material where the Corps was at least given the opportunity to defend themselves. I interviewed three people from the Corps, and then I had this piece of footage as well. Second, I wanted to underline the non-political nature of the problem, or the non-partisan nature of the problem. Vitter did a really good job of questioning this guy.
And just summarize the back and forth where the Major General admitted to some things.
Yeah, well, he admits that the only 5% of the flood walls that failed last time, the 5% that actually failed have been fixed. The other 95% are exactly the same as they were on August 29th, 2005. And I think it's really clear when you watch that back and forth that, unlike a lot of hearings, Vitter is not just reading questions prepared for him by his staff. He really knows this stuff, and he's really honing in on you know, the threats to people in New Orleans from the Corps of Engineers, deciding to go with what they acknowledge is a technically not superior solution to a particular problem.
And he's also like a good questioner should be in the moment and actually listening to the guy's answer and sort of going, what?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's the anti-Larry King approach to asking questions.
Yeah, no suspenders either.
Yeah.
Mike Peskin for Brian Lehrer on WNYC, speaking with Harry Shearer. Tell me a little bit, either take one or summarize all. There are three whistleblowers, and each one had some negative things happen to them because all they did was they went out and they either tried to tell people high on the chain that the pumps aren't working in the case of one woman, or they were university experts who came up with reports that no one has questioned the validity of, and yet their careers suffered. So how'd you find these people, and what was compelling about them beyond just the stuff they were saying?
Well, their names were in the paper as they were releasing their interim findings, so it was obvious that these were the people to talk to. Dr. Bob B., UC Berkeley, led one of the teams. He's had 30 years of experience in going and doing the autopsies of disasters. I mean, the engineering autopsies, not the human autopsies, but going and finding out why disasters happen. His partner is represented in the film, Dr. Ray Seed, by a scathing letter that he wrote summarizing his experience of trying to investigate this thing, although he wouldn't actually appear on film. But Bob B. is a wonderful, heroic guy who, he's tenured at UC Berkeley, so the worst thing that's happening to him is that he's being shunned by his colleagues in the profession who treat him as, call him an enemy of the United States. Those colleagues, by the way, do a lot of work for the Army Corps of Engineers, which now he explains in the film is not so much a Corps of Engineers as a Corps of Contract Administrators. They contract out most of the work, both the design and the construction. So if you're an engineer, a civil engineer, and you'd like to get a lot of work, you don't want to piss off the Army Corps of Engineers. Dr. Ivor Van Heerden was the head of the team at LSU, Louisiana State University. He was deputy head of the LSU Hurricane Center. And he'd been warning for years about what could happen if New Orleans was hit by something like this. He had developed very sophisticated computer modeling for storm surge in the event of a hurricane and its effect on New Orleans. And he led a team out of LSU and kept being threatened by university administrators to shut up, stop giving interviews to the press about his findings, stop testifying in trials. There's a trial that actually, a legal case that actually went to trial, and the Corps of Engineers was found liable for hundreds of millions of dollars of damages, potentially, if it's upheld on appeal.
Mm-hmm.
And Ivor Van Heerden eventually was fired from his job by LSU. And then Maria Garzino is an engineer with the Corps of Engineers, went to New Orleans to supervise the testing and installation of these new pumps, part of this fancy new system, and discovered that the pumps couldn't pass the test, even when they lowered the testing standards to try to get them through. They were installed anyway, and she says flat out they cannot work, they will not work under hurricane conditions, and her allegations have been upheld by an agency of the U.S. government that investigates whistleblower complaints. And that report has been on President Obama's desk since June of last year.
And she actually won some sort of whistleblower award, which I get the sense she'd gladly trade for her life and career and reputation.
Absolutely.
And sanity back.
She can't be fired by the Corps of Engineers, but they sit her in a corner with nothing to do and you know, basically isolate her and go, see, nice, you like being a whistleblower, here you go.
Yeah, here's an award.
Yeah.
Ivor Van Heerden, if you follow this as I do, and I was there 2 days after the levees broke, and I had no idea about any of the backstory. I guess, saw a lot of the pathos and tried to get as much of that down as I could while I was there. Ivor Van Heerden was in the Spike Lee documentary, mm-hmm. and he's South African accent, if some of our listeners are trying to place that guy. But which brings me to the point, Spike Lee did a couple of great documentaries about Katrina. They were shown on HBO. What's happened to your documentary? What's the distribution story been?
We premiered it on a one-night-only event last Monday a week ago, August 30th, which was the fifth anniversary in the theaters nationwide. And then it's coming back to New York and L.A. for a week, starting a week from tomorrow. And we're showing it in London this coming Wednesday night at a documentary series at a theater in London. And then we're, trying to mine other opportunities. My purpose in making this. This was not a career move on my part. I have another career. But I really felt the urge to try to, as I said before, redo the balance of what the country understands about what happened in New Orleans, what happened to New Orleans, and why it happened. And so, you know, my priority is to get as many people to see it as possible. You know, we may end up giving it away on the internet before it's all over.
And it will show in New York at the IFC Center from September 24th to the 30th. I remember reading a lot of your reporting in the New Yorker, I think on the OJ trial. What's been your, I guess, journalism background?
I was guilty of committing journalism as a young person. I worked for Newsweek for a while and wrote freelance for a while. Wrote a story which some people may have seen, a long sort of investigation into the Jerry Lewis telethon in 1976. And then I did cover the OJ civil trial. It was for Slate.com.
Okay.
So every once in a while I do dip into that, but I had never before done a feature-length documentary. I'd done little documentary pieces about New Orleanians in the recovery period for an online site called MyDamnChannel.com. We'd done five portraits of people in their post-K lives. So that was sort of the warm-up for this.
And, of course, you've gone from mockumentarian to documentarian and all those Chris Guest documentaries. But tell me if I'm wrong. The process of making those, they look like a documentary after they're edited together. But the process, not just the subject matter, but the process has got to be totally different, right?
Not totally different. I mean, there are not many more takes in a mock than there are in a real doc. I mean, we would do, in this picture, usually a couple of takes just to get a different angle of the interviewee, and in the Christopher Guest movies we'll usually do maybe maximum of three takes to get different angles. So in that sense you're not going through the material any more frequently than you are in a documentary, and we're not necessarily trying to be funny. I mean, Chris casts funny people,
right?
And then kind of has confidence that something funny will come out, but he's not sitting there with a stopwatch going 10 seconds, no punchline, where's the laughs, everybody, come on. We're just trying to do the scene, you know. We're funny people being actors.
Right, and you're not, and in those documentaries, he's not afraid to have minutes go by where the emotion is not humor, but there'll be a touching song in, say, A Mighty Wind, and it's just touching. I guess the opposite of that is going on in your documentary, where you're not afraid to have the serious documentary and then put these John Goodman Q&A sessions in for a little levity.
Yeah, I felt that this is deep stuff, although both Dr. Van Heerden and Dr. B are blessed with the ability of being great teachers, so they do make it almost common sense, a lot of this stuff. But I did feel the need to sort of break it every once in a while and have John sort of host a little segment where we address some of the persistent myths about New Orleans that have grown in the last 5 years, like why are people living below sea level? Well, it turns out New Orleans is half above sea level, and sea level had nothing to do with this flood. A lot of the houses that flooded were 12 feet, 15 feet above sea level, but when a 25-foot wall of water comes at you, that's 12 or 15 feet doesn't really help. So we wanted to puncture those with the sense of humor that New Orleanians have about life in general, and John, being a New Orleanian, was the perfect person to host it.
Yep, ladies and gentlemen, that was Harry Shearer. You know him as Ned Flanders and Principal Skinner and so many great comedy documentaries, mockumentaries. His latest is The Big Uneasy, a serious and challenging film about New Orleans and Hurricane Katrina. Harry, thanks so much for taking the time.
Thank you, Mike.
Coming up, an update on the data visualization project in a moment.